there's lifestyle factors outside of the gym. That's every single meal you ate. These are literally all factors that relate to our output physically. There's so many that we can't name them all and we can't manipulate all of them. And there's a very simple system based on whoever you are, whoever your coach is, that you probably follow of like, get 7 to 9 hours of sleep, eat X amount of protein, eat this many calories, shoot for this many carbs, et cetera, you know? And so just like coaching or strength programming, if I were to give like a prescription of a what a great person is, it's the same thing. It's too many variables to name them all. It's too many variables to describe them all. I would say the framework that I went over for me leads to a great person. You know, face the dragon. That's a person who challenges themselves.
You're a saint. Strive Strength and Conditioning empowers people to be happier, healthier, and more successful in life. They help you to crush it in the gym so you can crush it even better outside of the gym. They've got top-notch coaching and an even better community. If you're looking to up your game in your fitness or your healthy habits, this is the place to go. Check them out at www.strivebastrop.com.
All right, everybody. I am so excited to have you join us on this next episode. Our guest today is, maybe you've met a person like this. You're at an event, you're at a party, you're at a gathering of some sort, and somehow you just, you kind of gravitate towards a person in the room. You either, something is said that's interesting or whatnot. And, that's who this guest is for me today. I was recently at this this conference, a summit of professionals in the fitness industry, and they had this social gathering, and I bumped into this guy. His name is Joel Sherman, and we just hit it off immediately. Super interesting. I knew I just had to get him on this podcast. So Joel, welcome to Doing the Work. How are you doing today, man?
I'm doing awesome. Thanks for having me on the show. I've listened to a handful of episodes and I love what you're doing. And this is cool for me because I have a podcast, but this is the first podcast I've ever been on as a guest.
Oh, really? Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Well, I'm glad that that it's on mine because like you, I've been listening to your podcast and you do such a great job. So I know that that you're going to be a great guest.
Thanks for saying that.
Yeah, for our audience, just tell everybody who you are, what you do, help us get to know you a little bit.
Cool. My name's Joel Sherman. I'm a full-time CrossFit fitness coach. I use the term fitness professional because, as you know, there's a lot of stuff that goes into coaching people and being a fitness professional outside of just coaching people. That takes up my day-to-day stuff. I would consider myself also a podcast host at this point. I've done like 11, I'm on episode 11 of my podcast. It's called Good People. And as far as, personal endeavors and interests go, I would say that I'm pretty decent at many different things and I have lots of different interests. Jiu-jitsu, blue belt. I've run a 50 miler, 100 mile ultra marathon. Overall, I'm just super interested in human movement, sport, things of that nature.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the cool things about having you on this show is that you've got this cool, diverse background in a lot of things that my audience is definitely going to be interested in. I like how you made the distinction just a couple seconds ago about the difference between what I usually call the difference between being a trainer and a coach. You described yourself as a full-time coach, and I think that's a lot. There is a whole level, there's another level to being a coach versus a trainer. And so I'll definitely want to dig into that a little bit. But before we dig into that, I always like to kind of get to know our guests just on, a little bit, of a deeper level. I'm curious, do you have something that you live by? Do you have like an ethos? Do you have a mission statement? Do you have, personal values? Something like that you always kind of have. It's right there on the tip of your tongue. You tell people about it all the time.
Yeah, I would say values, right? It's kind of more of a rule set than anything. The rule set sort of defines values. I've sat down and journaled over the years about specific things that maybe I value, or I want to be aware that I am trying to pursue, to prioritize things like that. I don't actually think I've ever shared this with anybody except for myself, but I was super into video games growing up. So they're like little slogans all based around, I guess, sort of like fantasy world, Skyrim type stuff. Rule number one for me is face the dragon. It's a phrase that I use all the time. I'm probably going to get it tattooed on my wrist one day, but for me, that sort of talks and emphasizes the values of doing things that are challenging. Face the dragon is a cool way of saying, like, I think everybody's aware that there are things that they have in their life that they would like to accomplish or they would like to pursue. And it starts literally by just turning around and taking a look at them. And I think that that step for a lot of people is a super challenging part of the process of achieving a goal or pursuing some sort of career path. It's not necessarily fighting the dragon or slaying the dragon or whatever. It's literally just turning around and looking at it and kind of seeing what you're dealing with is the thing that stops most people in their tracks. Rule number two for me is play the game. In the sense of, I think most people think that they're in the NBA championship in life, which is really wrong. This is like 40-year-old pickup basketball on a Sunday, you know. Something that I sort of tell myself a lot is like, go for full court shots, or like do a stupid granny shot or behind the back, or, you know, or pass the ball to somebody else, because it doesn't really matter. And I'm going to come back and play the next pickup basketball game next week. You know what I mean? And I think people underneath all of that, there's a sense of have fun. There's a sense of don't take yourself too seriously. Try things out. Do things that are new and uncomfortable, etc. And then third rule that I live by is never lay down the sword or never set down the sword. A big thing that I really believe in is this idea of endurance. Ultra marathoning is a good teacher of that for me. There's really challenging things in life, and sticking things out is sort of a trend that I've noticed, especially over the last couple of years. That's very important if you want to be successful at anything. And it's even more than that, however you measure success, it doesn't matter, right? It's just enduring hard things is a skill that is useful as a human being to have. And I think that that's an important part of any worthwhile pursuit, is there's going to be bumps in the road and you got to sort of stick those things out. That's kind of a brief overview, I guess, of it. Like I said, I've never really even articulated that before, but those are like three rules or values, I guess, that I sort of define for myself.
Man, I love those. I love them because they're action oriented. I have this in the past. I've coached a lot of people to basically do this for themselves, right? Like if they don't already have like a personal mission statement, if they don't have a vision for their life, an actual vision statement, and if they don't have personal values, I try to get them to kind of articulate them like you just did, and then get them into the habit of looking at them regularly, like reminding themselves, oh yeah, this is what I'm about. This is what I said I'm about, and this is what I'm going to be about. And I love yours because a lot of times people will come up with things like, you know, and you see organizations with values like this. It's like integrity. And, yeah. You know, it's like, well, it's like, well, yeah, of course you're going to say integrity. Like, you're not going to say like, no, I don't want to live with integrity, or, you know what I mean? But like yours are like super action, or, you know, face the dragon, you know, never put down the sword. And what was the second one again?
Play the game.
Play the game. Yeah. I mean, it's action oriented. I mean, I can hear it and I know, I can already picture it in my mind. So those are awesome.
And one of the reasons why I kind of wrote it out this way for myself is because I'm not, you know, this might be weird coming from a coach. I'm not a smart goal oriented person. I don't work that way and I never have. I think SMART is like an acronym people use for goals, where it's got to be like specific and there's a metric. And I obviously those things have a place. And I coach people on that regularly, especially for people who are analytically oriented, but I'm just not like that. I've never been like, I'm going to have a big podcast that 100,000 people download every week. I don't have that, but you know what I mean? Like I never set out to be like, I'm going to run 100 miles. It was just like, oh, that sounds cool and fun. I'm going to do it. And I trained for it and I did it. It was just like, oh, I kind of want to do a podcast. That sounds fun. And then I started doing that. And so like, for example, that's a good example of play the game, right? It's fun. It's the thing that's next. It's challenging. It's a part of this game that I want to figure out and try. And so I think just for anybody listening, that's a message that I really care about, is you don't always have to know what you're going to do. Just like try some shit out. And can I cuss on your podcast?
Yes, please do.
Okay, cool.
Makes it more interesting.
Yeah. Just try shit out. And you know, if that's the way that you think, I'm a very easygoing, go with the flow kind of guy. And so setting goals for me is just not super specific in that way.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing, right? Like, it's like people take things so seriously, even the things that they set around, like their hobbies and the things that they want to find joy in, they start, you know, trying to quantify it and, like, you know, own it and master it and all these other things. And sometimes you just lose the joy of that. I mean, if you watch a child coloring or playing a game or anything like that, they're just, you know, it's kind of like a really awesome thing to just sit back and watch. And I wish some adults just kind of lived that way a little bit more, you know?
Yeah, 100%.
Well, you've said a couple things about, like, your coaching style and your leadership style. And one of the things you said to me when we first met was, I might be paraphrasing this, but I'm going to try and get it right, that you're the anti-CrossFit CrossFit coach. Did I get that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. Tell me about that. Like, I'm so, I think I wanted to ask you more about it when you mentioned it, but we were in like a group or something. And so I didn't get a chance. So I've been wanting to ask you about that since.
Cool. Yeah. So I'll just start by saying it. When I say I'm an anti-CrossFit CrossFit coach, it's not really about the methodology. It's a skeptic's viewpoint. And you probably know this as well. You have a master's in exercise science, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so when I started coaching, I got my L1 in CrossFit when I was 19 years old. I drove to Philadelphia for the weekend by myself, which is like 5 hours from where I live, or three to five hours, I don't know exactly. But it was this weekend trip. I ended up not being able to check into my hotel because I was underage. I had to find this like shitty motel that I barely got. It was like one of 20 was going to allow me to stay there, right? So I get my L1, and I decided to get my L1 on a whim. I was training for my 50-mile ultramarathon at the time, and CrossFit was a thing that I thought that I was doing as like a supplemental strength thing because I was short on time because my miles were adding up, right? And for whatever reason, I was like, okay, I just feel compelled to go get certified in this thing. My master plan was to go get my L1, come back to my college town because I had 2 years of school left, and then just message there's two CrossFit gyms in my town, message them and, you know, intern for them, clean the bathrooms, do that sort of thing, like the hustle type stuff, right?
Yeah.
And so I went and I got it. And when I was there, it was awesome because at the time I was thinking, okay, for people like me, because I know myself and I know I work hard and I know that I put a lot of focused attention, this is the perfect entry level thing because it's cheap and accessible and anybody can do it. And that's a huge pro, but it's also a huge con. There's a lot of shitheads that get their L1s and then start coaching people that have no business doing it, right? And so obviously I didn't know all this stuff at the time. I was just starting out. I, for whatever reason, just did this thing, okay? And so when I got back and I started coaching and I realized how much I loved it, it was my goal to make this my full-time career. I don't have a background in exercise science or kinesiology. I went to school for communications. And so I have a bachelor's degree in communication studies. I studied romantic relationships, like interpersonal stuff, one-on-one, right?
Oh, interesting.
Which is helpful, you know.
I have a question about this. I'm going to come back to this, but yeah, go ahead.
Okay, cool. So I'm kind of in this world where I don't know what I'm doing. I have no background in exercise. I have this imposter syndrome. People tell me that I'm really good at what I do, but I don't believe them necessarily because I'm young. I'm still young, but I'm young and I'm just starting out, right? And so I really put a lot of effort into my own personal development. And for me, the communication side of things was pretty easy. I mean, don't get me wrong, I had to work a lot on that, but it came more naturally to me. And so I spent a lot of time reading. I just gravitate towards Olympic weightlifting specifically. So I read a lot of weightlifting literature, weightlifting textbooks, things like that. And so over the 2 years of me doing that, I graduated school, but I created enough of a clientele that I could actually do this as a full-time job, coaching classes, coaching one-on-one sessions, doing some administrative stuff behind the scenes. And I've landed this like head coaching position, right? And so from my own personal journey, there was a lot of effort and emphasis put on the developmental side of things, specifically the technical knowledge of CrossFit, right? What is a squat? What are the mechanics of clean and jerk and snatch? What are the mechanics of these gymnastics movements that we do? And something that I saw is the CrossFit system is a system where there's a lot of part-time coaches, which is totally fine. But most CrossFit gyms, there's some hybrid of owner, maybe a 1 to 5 full-time staff, and then a handful of part-timers that sort of supplement, right? Which is, I think, a successful model for sure.
Yeah.
But it's not the issue that there's full-time coaches and part-time coaches. There's an issue of there is a lack of professional approach. Part-time coaches can still coach like professionals. And I noticed that that was an issue. There's a guy who I really admire who works for NC Fit. His name is Matt Della Valle. And he words it like CrossFit coaches, more specifically functional fitness coaches, lack two things. It's consistency and professionalism. Consistency is, I mean, you know, coaches that are very professional, but they coach a kick-ass class once out of every 10 times and the other ones kind of are mediocre or they're not very good. And then there's the coach that's really consistent, but he or she lacks professionalism, right? And so I never really found the words to articulate that until I heard Matt Della Valle say that, but it was something that I felt inside. So when I say I'm an anti-CrossFit coach, what I mean by that is I'm skeptic of the methodology, and that has made me understand it better, right?
Yeah.
I think there's a big clash between traditional strength and conditioning and CrossFit because there's a misunderstanding from the regular strength and conditioning side because they're viewing these part-time amateur coaches, not necessarily part-time, I should say amateur, because I think it's a mindset. It's not actually time spent. They're viewing these amateur coaches as what CrossFit is, where there's professionals in the system. And so when I say I'm an anti-CrossFit coach, it's kind of like a thing for me to say to the traditional strength and conditioning world. That's kind of like, no, hear me out on this. We're all doing the same thing. And it's just something that you don't understand looking at it from an outside perspective. And it's even something that I recognize that a lot of people in the system don't understand because they're not willing to do a lot of hard work that it takes to get to a knowledge level that is really required, in my opinion, to be an effective coach.
Yeah. And I couldn't agree with you more after having been in, I've been a coach for 25 years. I also, got into CrossFit, in 2007. So however many years that is, maybe is that 16 years or something like that. And so, having a traditional strength conditioning background, having an education in it, and then having all these diverse experiences in performing as an athlete at a high level, and then also coaching and leading athletes, at high levels in various different endeavors, I kind of got to see like, okay, I can see the strength in CrossFit. I agree with parts of the methodology and the foundations of it. But oftentimes, and I think this is what it really comes down to with what you says, it's oftentimes poorly executed. It's sometimes a cultural issue more than it is a design issue or a conceptual issue. But I think it's come a long way. There was like some dark years, I think, in the CrossFit world for a while, and it's kind of come a long way. There are a lot more people who are really professionalizing that industry.
And I think another pillar of that, I'm an anti-CrossFit coach that I touched on a little bit, but it's a big part of my belief behind it, is that idea of being a skeptic. I think one of the principles of being a science-oriented, I hate the word science-based, because what does that mean, right? But somebody who, I know CrossFit works because I constantly question its merit, if it does, right? Like, okay, here's the system and I'm going to try it. Oh, it worked. Okay. That I'm going to try it again. Okay.
Yep.
And it continues to work. Or, hey, there's this piece of CrossFit that I'm pretty on the fence about. I'm not sure. And it seems like it's kind of bullshit. And then I test it out and I'm either proven right or wrong. And
yeah,
it just forms a more focused opinion or a more accurate depiction of what works and what doesn't as it relates to physical fitness, right?
Yeah, I think that's the scientific method. And I think all people who want to be who want to be masters of whatever their craft is have to use some sort of process like that. Like I didn't know when I was in, you know, when I was in the Rangers in the Army, I didn't know we were using that method. But what I did learn is like we would come up with a plan. We would do tons of rehearsals and we would practice and then we'd figure out, does that plan work or not? And we were totally fine with like just being brutally honest and the fact, you know, we weren't trying to prove ourselves right. We were just trying to do it correctly, you know, have a perform at a high level. And so sometimes that meant proving ourselves wrong through the practice. And I think what you're talking about is what I think all good coaches should be doing. You know, hypothesis, test it, you know, measure it, all that stuff.
Exactly. And a saying that I say to myself often is honesty is the best gift that you can give yourself and others, right? And so whether I'm giving somebody a feedback on their clean and jerk and I just say, hey, by the way, that looked horrible. And I wouldn't actually say that to somebody, but that looked horrible. And the feedback that I just gave you, you didn't apply at all. You know, I'm not just going to lie to them and say, good, awesome job, even though it looked the same or potentially got worse, right? And similarly with my system, if I take people through a back squat cycle that takes 8 weeks and they got worse, like that's on me. And I gotta try something else.
Yeah. And what I think is great about that, and this is actually getting into what I want to delve into with you is the, you know, what is it, you know, being, what does it take to be a great coach? You know, there's being a coach, there's being a trainer, there's being a coach, and then there's like being a great coach or an elite coach. And I think what you're saying is, because going back to what you just said a minute ago, like I wouldn't say, oh, that looked horrible.
Yeah.
I might say that to one of my athletes. If I have that kind of, I have to know my athlete. I have to have built the relationship and I have to know what kind of feedback do they need to hear? You know, so sometimes, you know, the answer now that as I'm getting more educated, I'm getting more experienced stuff. It's always the answer is it depends. You know, yeah. There's no, you know, it's, I mean, there's really no right or wrong. It just depends on so many different variables. And the way that you master being a coach is knowing all the variables and being kind of aware of them.
Yeah. It's so, you know, like the fuck around, find out meme.
Yeah.
Like the more you fuck around, the more you're going to find out.
Yeah.
I think that is so true, man. Like however funny that is, it's like just in general in life, it doesn't matter. Like when we live, we fuck around, right? No matter what. And yep. no matter what, at the end of the day, we're going to find out, right? So whether your coaching methodology is effective or, you know, if the diet that you're consuming on a regular basis is a healthy diet, et cetera. Or is the jiu-jitsu training that I'm doing working? Am I getting better? You're going to find out. And so there's a guy that I train sometimes and his like catchphrase is, we'll see, where I'll be like, hey man, like you're looking pretty good. And he's always just like, we'll see, you know? And I think that's awesome. That's like the same sort of, you know, we'll see.
Yeah. I think what you're kind of touching on is something that, that kind of has been resonating. It's something, again, I borrowed from the military, but I try to apply to everything else is what we call in the military MOPS and MOES. There's measures of performance and there's measures of effectiveness. So measure of performance means you can do something exactly right and it still be the wrong thing. Like I could perform a particular, you know, I could follow a recipe perfect, but it might be the wrong meal. You know, and then there's measures of effectiveness, meaning doing the right thing. And so I'm kind of always thinking about that as a coach, as a leader, you know, you don't always want to do things right. You want to be doing the right thing as well.
Yeah. And I think sometimes like to that point, sometimes you are doing the right thing and you're not getting the results that you want yet. You know, like I'm doing an effective back squat program and maybe just so happens that the day before I retested, I ate too many tacos and I spent all night in the bathroom and then I didn't get good sleep. And then when I retested, it looks like my squat didn't go up, but I just needed to recover a little bit better before, you know, along those lines of, yeah. This might be almost inverse of what you were saying, but sometimes like you are doing all the right things and you're hitting all the, checking all the boxes and then it doesn't yield the results that you're looking for. And I think that's fine too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's what I love about this industry is that, there's just so many lessons. It really is a microcosm of like real life, you know? And the reason why I choose to do this work is not because I really don't give a shit how much weight people lift and I could give a fuck how fast they run. I want to help them learn how to, cause how you do anything is how you do everything. I want them to learn how to be amazing at their lives, and how you might follow a back squat program, like you mentioned, is exactly how you might learn how to be elite in your career field or elite as a parent or whatever else, you know?
Yeah. 100%. I couldn't agree more.
So while we're talking about it, it's like, what do you think defines, or what are the characteristics of a great coach?
Yeah. You know, it's so many things, sort of what we were just talking about. I think if I had to give you like a cookie cutter blank statement answer, it would be high emotional intelligence mixed with a deep pool of knowledge, a deep understanding of whatever methodology that they're giving to people. You know, it doesn't matter if it's CrossFit or powerlifting or weightlifting or ultra running or strength and conditioning, but a deep understanding of the thing that you focus on mixed with emotional intelligence is the combination. And so like literally what I'm talking about right now is the art. There's an art of coaching and there's a science of coaching, right? And we can get into so many specifics about what each one of those things mean, but at the bottom level of all of that, I think great people make great coaches.
Wow. Yeah. Tell me more about that. Why do you think that?
There's so many variables. Like you said, when I'm getting somebody's squat stronger, the mechanics of the back squat are one thing. The mood that they're in every week, however many, say they're squatting twice a week, for those two sessions, the mood that they're in, the sleep that they got before, the intensity that they're lifting at, percentage based off of their one rep max. You know, there's so many variables that are going to lead to the outcome, which is however many weeks that squat cycle is, right? There's lifestyle factors outside of the gym. That's every single meal you ate. You know, like these are literally all factors that relate to our output physically. And there's so many that we can't name them all and we can't manipulate all of them. And there's a very simple system based on whoever you are, whoever your coach is, that you probably follow of like, get 7 to 8 hours of sleep, or get 7 to 9 hours of sleep, eat X amount of protein, eat this many calories, shoot for this many carbs, et cetera, you know? And so just like coaching or strength programming, if I were to give like a prescription of what a great person is, it's the same thing. It's too many variables to name them all. It's too many variables to describe them all. I would say the framework that I went over for me leads to a great person. You know, face the dragon. That's a person who challenges themselves, who knows even how hard it's going to be, but they still turn around and face the dragon. Play the game. That's an individual that has fun. They have a kind spirit. They are excited about the game. They are a good sport. They pass it to their teammates. They sometimes are selfish and are a ball hog when they know they can make the shot. If they knock somebody down on the other team, they pick them back up because they're part of the game too. They come back every single Sunday to play pickup with the dads or whatever. And then that last one of never lay down the sword, there's endurance to being a great person. It's not always easy. Sometimes your tire blows out when you're on your way to the gym and you still have to train, even though you feel shitty, or you do eat too many tacos and you were on the toilet all night and you got shitty sleep, but you still show up and it might not be what you wanted, but you execute on the objectives of that training session as best as you can, right? And so I don't know if I really answered your question, but there's so many variables, it's hard to be specific about it, but it's a lot of things.
Yeah, I like how you wrapped it up. I think you had a great summary. It's like, to be a great coach, you have to be a great person. And I think that's true. Like if any of us think back, like I can think back, I've had some, you know, I'll say coaches/leaders because, you know, they're synonymous in a lot of scenarios, but really that's what it is. They were great people. They actually cared about me. They were also good people because they held me to a standard. And if they knew that I could achieve a standard, they didn't really like accept much less than that, unless they were being a good person and knew I was just having a bad day or whatever. You know what I mean? So I think you really, I think I hadn't really ever said it that way, but I think that's a great way to explain it. So along with that, as you're a head coach at your gym, what do you hope for? I mean, like, to what end, right? You're a coach, you're a head coach. Like, what do you hope for your athletes? Why do you do it?
I hope athletes leave or come or whatever, because they get what they came for and more, right? You summed it up well of like, I don't care how much you deadlift or how much, not even how much you deadlift, but I don't care how much your deadlift improves, right? I don't care how much weight that you've lost at this point, right? Obviously there is a thing that we owe our athletes to give them the thing that they came for. If somebody's overweight, like if somebody's obese and they are, it's really detrimental to their health. We owe it to them to show them and help them lose the weight, right? Obviously, if this is something that they want for themselves.
Right.
And so I need to give them that, but I hope that the system that I've showed them of this is how you get a stronger deadlift or a back squat of showing up week by week and adding a little bit more every time and never doing more than you're capable of. And when you have a shitty day, you can pull back a little bit, but when you're feeling really good, we're going to really push the envelope and try to PR, et cetera, right? These are skills that branch out to everything in life. There's like five things that you need to know to live a good life, right? And you can apply it to everything. Progressive overload is a good example of that, right? That's how we get a stronger back squat, but it's how you get better at everything. You just get a little bit better incrementally over time.
Yeah. Right?
Being a kind person is a very important part to being successful in the gym, because if you don't say hello to the people that are there when you show up, if you don't high five people when they hit their PR, you know, like you're never going to have a sense of community. And that's a thing that really helps make sure that I go to the gym tomorrow and that I stay consistent. Things like that.
Right.
So I guess just, I don't even know how to articulate that either. You know, it's, I need them to feel like they're making progress towards their goal, but I also want to show them other aspects of fitness and health and life that maybe they're missing or haven't really quite considered the connections between.
Yeah. And I love that, because it's, you know, I think that's going back to what a great coaches do. They help people to make the connection between what they're the work that they're putting in right now, whatever that is, and how to use that as a tool in a lot of other things. They use it as teaching opportunities. Because the reality of all of this that we do, and you know, I don't care whatever you coach, the reality is that most of the people who you are coaching aren't going to end up being a professional at whatever you're coaching them in. They're not going to probably end up being elite. So then you got to, you know, it's just, why am I doing this? If, you know, I think there's really has to be something bigger outside of the actual sport or the skill itself.
100%. And something that you said there that kind of rang in my head was the saying of simple, not easy, right? It's like, I'm living proof of that. I want to show people that that's what they're missing in their life is people who I've lost. When I was in high school, I lost about 50 pounds. That's what started me on this whole fitness journey. I was like 5'8". I went from 210 to 160, right?
It's amazing.
And when I was like 15 or 16 or whatever that time in my life was, right? And I know what it is like to feel inside like you will never get a grasp of this thing that's haunting you, which is being overweight. I know that's how a lot of people feel. And I felt like that, right? And the answer to that is all the things we've been talking about. It's a very simple approach. It's a very systemized approach. It's just not easy. And it's when somebody's there to help you along the way, it is so much more rewarding of a process for me as a coach to help people do the thing than when I actually did it myself, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and we tend to discount our efforts. Most of us are hard on ourselves, right? Like, oh, I didn't do it that well, or I could have done it better, or it wasn't that important. But we tend to put other people's efforts on pedestals, or we tend to, you know what I mean? So that kind of, I think that is in line with that.
I think that mindset too is 100% underneath a lot of the issues that people face too. It's like, people will see you and I talking on this podcast as guys who have all this shit figured out, right?
Right.
Like, they're talking about mindset and in fitness and health and in this nonchalant, very simplistic approach, right? But it's taken lots of years of confusion and uncertainty for me to get to this point, right? Where I haven't always felt like this. Just like I said, when I was lost weight, there was a time when I was like, I'm never going to overcome this thing in my life. But it can't be that. It has to be, all right, I'm not going to eat cake tonight for today. And yeah, then tomorrow, you know, or whatever.
Yeah. I think it's like the people who are really good at coaches, I think often are ones who, you know, they've experienced it also. And what I was thinking in my head while you were talking about how you had lost a lot of weight as a younger person, it in my mind was like, oh, that makes sense. Now the kind of person, the quality of the person that you are now, you know, is kind of explained because, you know, because I was chubby when I was a kid too. And I think there's this thing that, you know, it's a gift when you look at it. It's a gift because you had to deal with some of the insecurity and some of the, you know, not feeling great in your own skin. And then overcoming that, you really have a new gratitude, you know, for this blessing that you have now, this fitness and your abilities and all that other stuff. And I wish that gift for a lot of people. I want people to have setbacks. I want people to have failures. I want them to suck at things and then overcome it because like all that beautiful learning that comes out of that, you know, that it's a gift.
And 100%, I will never not view myself, at least, I don't know, I'm 23, right? This was 8 years ago that this happened, which isn't that long in the grand scheme of things, right? Especially when I'm 50, 60 years old, right?
Yeah.
I was coaching this morning and a lady who's a PT client of one of our other coaches or one of our owner, she said to me that I am a very intimidating coach because I'm not like a yes man and I tell her what's wrong with her stuff. And when she started, she was always intimidated by me. And number one, I was like, we had a conversation about it and she kind of meant it in a way as a compliment, which was funny to me, but it caught me so off guard when she said that to me, like, I'm intimidating. How could anybody view me in that way? I'm like the most easygoing, carefree, fun guy to myself. And part of it is because I have that perception of myself of I was just a 16-year-old chubby kid that played video games for hours a day and like stuffing my face with chips and salsa. And I still like that guy and want to be that guy in a way. But I'm, you know, I just maybe when you hear 50-mile, 100-mile ultra marathon, blue belt in jiu-jitsu, tattoo sleeve, I'm like the stereotypical guy that everybody wants to be right now. But I'm not that guy. That might be what I look like on the outside, but I'm still the overweight kid to me.
Yeah. And I think about this a lot. I a few years ago went through a form of therapy that's called internal family systems. And it's essentially like, you create these characters within yourself. Like once an incident happens in your life or a way of being, you kind of like carry these people. What they would say is you have this like family of characters inside of you. And I've thought about that a lot because it's like, well, one, it's like, yeah, I'm all of those things. I'm not any one way. Like the way, like you said, someone's going to look at you and maybe they hear about these experiences, these endeavors that you have, and they're going to think one thing about you and they're going to try and put you in that box, but they're not going to realize that I'm also that chubby kid who played video games and was really insecure and didn't like parts of myself, you know? And you don't have to be either or. I think that's what real strength is, you know, getting when you can say like, I can be this and I can be that. I don't have to be either or.
And those things will, for example, I started playing video games again recently. I started playing the game that I played religiously when I was younger. Uh-huh. I started playing it casually. And when I started, I had a really hard time finding balance because similar to what you're saying, I've only ever played that game like a maniac where I would come home and I would play from the hour I got home from school to like 11 PM. And I was obsessive over it. It's very highly competitive and strategic and it takes a lot of mental energy. And I started playing it instead of going to jiu-jitsu, which is fine, you know, like, but it took me to realize like, oh, I'm just like going back to this other guy and I've got to figure out how to make this guy who I've forgotten about that I do actually like a part of me now, but in a healthier way, because the older guy is not going to fly right now for this lifestyle that I'm trying to live.
Yeah. It's like, how do you evolve? Like, how do I take the good parts of that with me and keep evolving and growing? You know, it's, you know, you don't want to leave it all behind because there's strength in that, you know?
Yeah. And that's like a part of me that I miss for real. Like doing my 100 miler really showed me how much I don't want to become like the David Goggins that I would never have said that I was anywhere close to that level, you know, but I was doing stuff in that realm of all of the things that I was doing were fitness, stay hard, call myself a motherfucker. Like it was totally be a savage stuff. And I don't like doing that stuff all the time. I want to sit on the couch and watch whatever movie I'm watching with my girlfriend in the evening. I want to go out with my friends and have a drink and get a cheeseburger at the bar. I want to talk on a podcast with somebody about some arbitrary thing that I'm just interested in that has nothing to do with fitness or health, but it's just a cool conversation that I get to learn a lot from, you know? And so in a way, me playing video games or introducing this self back into my life has been really helpful in that way. And granted, there was like a couple of weeks where I was, okay, I'm doing this too much and I was overcorrecting in a way, but I think you're 100% right. Like, just remembering the parts of yourself that you really like and figuring out how to do it in a healthy way is so important, right? Because at first when I started playing again, there wasn't balance. It was just obsessive. And now I feel like I'm at a point where I don't think about it all day long. It's like a leisurely thing that I get the opportunity to do a couple hours a week, you know?
Yeah. Well, speaking of which, so I've heard like a few different things. So this video game sounds like it's pretty hard. It's competitive. Like you said, strategic. It's a challenging thing. I know that you play jiu-jitsu. You're a blue belt. You've mentioned that you do these ultra marathons, 100 and a 50 miles, which is just ridiculous. Maybe some people who are listening to this right now have like no mental concept for that, but that's fucking crazy. You know, that's a lot of miles to do at one time. A lot of people won't do that many miles in a month or even a year. A lot of people who are listening to this podcast right now might not do 100 miles in a year.
Some people won't do that in their life.
Right. So that's crazy and that's hard. And you do CrossFit, you coach CrossFit, you train at CrossFit. So all these hard things, right? And you mentioned a couple seconds ago, self-talk. You know, this, what do you say to yourself? And I think this is huge. And this is what I have a teens program that I coach here. It's my favorite program. I love helping young people to figure this shit out a lot sooner than I ever figured a lot of this stuff out. And so at the end of every workout, we have a little huddle and I like to just give them a little pep talk, you know, and one of the things I talk to them about regularly is this self-talk. You know, the things that you say to yourself on the inside are major, have a major impact in what you do on the outside and how things happen for you in your life. And so I'm curious for you, you do all this hard shit. Do you have a methodology of self-talk? Are there things that you say to yourself all the time that maybe you don't always say out loud? Or because you mentioned a second ago, like you called yourself a motherfucker, right? And maybe you kind of said it like, that's not what I should be. I'm not sure. I don't want to put words in your mouth. But I want to hear more about that piece of it.
Yeah. So actually, I was about to say, I'm gonna take a step back. This is going to be a very surprising answer for you. Okay. I think if you ask anybody who runs 100 miles, I have the polar opposite experience. I mean, I'm sure there's a select few, but I don't have this out of body, outer world experience when I run 100 miles. It just fucking sucks, dude. Like. You know, like yeah. I start, I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
And I'm about, after 10 miles, it doesn't get any better. The whole time is just pretty tedious and boring and painful and it's horrible, right? And when I did my last 100 miler, I was probably, the hardest part for me was between mile 58 and about mile 88, okay? And
it's a big
gap. There was a point in that section. Oh yeah, it was horrible. It was horrible. There was a point in that section where I, in my head, literally said, if I pass out right now, like on this ridgeline and I fall over, there's a good chance that I will severely hurt myself. And I had my pacer with me. and I'll get pulled from the race because I'm not going to quit this thing, but I don't want to be doing this anymore. So please, I hope I pass out right now and I hurt myself. Okay. And so that said, there is a lot of value in self-talk, right? Like you said, I would consider my self-talk to be realistic. I'm pretty even keeled across the board. It's really hard for me to get super low. And I have a really, I'm not one of these like slap yourself on the chest, sniffing salts kind of guy before a lift. I'm very, 7 is my high, 5 is my low. Like it yeah. doesn't really fluctuate too much, right? And so for me, you know, when I'm in that moment, when I'm like, I want to pass out right now, so I hurt myself, I knew objectively speaking that it was okay that I was feeling those things. I was like, oh, you're fine. Like, yeah, you're feeling this thing because you've run fucking 75 miles in the last day. Like, of course you're going to be feeling those things. Just get to the next aid station. I'm going to see my girlfriend and my crew, and they're going to make me feel better enough that I'll at least start moving towards the next one. And then I'll feel this horrible feeling again. And then I'll get to the next one. And it's very much like consolidate my world around me, be realistic about where you're at, expectations for steps that we can take to get to the next milestone, et cetera, things like right. that.
Yeah.
Did you have a second part to your question? I think I forgot it.
Just, I want to know what I really want to know what you're saying to yourself, like how you get yourself through this stuff. Like, and a good example is one of the things that I'll say to my teens or that I'll say to myself, because one of my personal values is do the work. I have five values. One of them is do the work. And so sometimes in my head, when I catch myself, I'm talking myself out of the work. You know, I'll be like, oh, you know, you don't have to do this next rep, or, you know, like, oh, just slow down or whatever. I'll start getting lazy in my mind. And then if I catch myself and I'm being my best self, I'll be like, no, like, this is what you're here for. You want to do this work. This is where you're going to make the progress. Talk. And I'll say to someone else, if I catch them, if I can see their mental wheels spinning and that I can see them like kind of talking themselves out of the work, I'll say, hey, no, talk yourself into the work. You know, talk yourself into it. And so I'm just curious, do you have things like that that you say to yourself?
Yeah, 100%. And I think training hard is something that for me is, I like training hard. So leaning into that is very, and I'll be honest, probably over the last couple months, I've had the toughest time getting myself to work out that I've ever had. And it's because I've been having so much fun doing the podcast that I'm doing that I am like, all I want to do is that, right?
Yeah.
But still, I mean, once I get to the gym and I start moving, I have a great time and it's fun and it's, I can very easily lean into it. Something that I would say happens a lot with my self-talk is, and I think this comes from me being an unconfident person in my youth and just overweight, whatever, didn't know. I didn't feel like I was really capable of anything. I thought I should have been accomplishing more. But I use the things that I've done as a point of reference. Like when I call myself a motherfucker, it's like, motherfucker, you've run 100 miles. Like you can get through this 5-minute workout, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
And so I would say I use that sort of in a positive way of my self-talk is very much, you've done all of these things. You're going to let this silly thing beat you or whatever, you know? And that's literally what I say to myself sometimes, especially when I'm having a challenging time getting myself to push and, you know, feeling lethargic, whatever.
Yeah. And I think, you know, there's just something powerful about all that. It's like, however you do it, mindset is like 80% of the whole thing. You know, you'll hear these cliches but it's true. Like your body will do amazing things. It's freaky what your body can do. Even untrained, even the untrained human body can do some crazy stuff, but it's really going to be the mind and the mindset that is going to be the major limiting factor. And so that's why I just really love to tap into that with the people I talk to. It's just like, what's your mindset? How do you get this done? You know, because one of my values is another value is prioritize what matters, do the work, right? And then the other one is like, own that shit. You know, you got to own it. So if it's that kind of like steps, right? So I like to hear about other people like yourself who I've never done 100. Well, I've done 100 different kind of 100-miler, but I haven't done it like you've done it. And I'm like, well, how do you do that? You know? So I appreciate you sharing that mindset with us.
Yeah. It's not, I always say this to my ultra running friends. Like, I'm not the guy to ask what 100 miler is like, because I'm gonna tell you not to do it. It's horrible. Don't do it.
I always say this too. Like, I've done things. People like, you know, oh, you're an airborne ranger, or you've done this, you were in this unit or whatever. And I always say like. Yeah, but like, the people who are going to talk the most about how hard it is are the people who have already done it, you know, because it's kind of like they want to make themselves look better, because like, oh yeah, it was really hard. And then like, and look at me, I did it, you know. But like, the truth is if any human being can do it, all human beings can probably do it with the right conditions and the right training and so on and so forth.
Yeah. For me, it's definitely not like a, look all the hard stuff I've done. It's like, I'm an idiot. Don't do it.
This is a cautionary tale.
Yeah. I think being a good person and being a great person, this is going back to being a good coach, it requires self-exploration. You know, I like to pretend that I exist as this little man inside of my head, and I get to view, I think you use the term meat suit a lot, right?
Yes.
I get to view my meat suit doing the things it does. Like, I have all of the natural reactions and tendencies of a 23-year-old young stupid man that doesn't know much about life yet, but I'm good at observing myself do all those stupid things. And so I think over time, what that is going to give me is this perspective on myself, perspective on the world, that is very helpful in, you know, navigating decisions for myself, but helping others as well.
Yeah, I think that's a great segue into your podcast. You know, you're doing this podcast. It's called Good People. And, you know, tell me a little bit more about this project. I'd like to kind of hear, like, why'd you pick that? Why'd you pick Good People? You know, the word, you know, the term Good People. And, you know, I'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah. So we, man, this is kind of like a long story in a sense. I did my 100 miler in September of last year. And during that time, during my training, you know, you spend a lot of time running by yourself and thinking, and I was consuming audiobooks and listening to podcasts, and a lot of time was spent by myself. It was a combination of things. And I kind of came to the conclusion on that run that like there was a creative part of my life that I was not pursuing that I would have liked to pursue. Right. So whether it's, and it didn't have to be for anybody else, drawing on my iPad or painting or, you know, whatever. I did graphic design when I was in high school, and I love music. There's a part of me that artistically or creatively wasn't satisfied.
Yeah.
And so I don't even remember when the origins of this were, but there was a guy at our gym. He's the producer of my podcast.
Uh-huh.
And we were joking one day about, this is going to sound like it's not connected at all, by the way, but it is. We were joking one day. We have similar builds. We're like this rectangle frame where we just have these wide birthing hips and like big butts, and we're men. So it's kind of awkward. And, we were just talking about how there's no pair of shorts that fit us. And so we joked with each other. We were like, dude, let's make a pair of shorts and we'll call them big ass shorts. Right. And it was kind of this joke or whatever, but a couple of weeks went by and I was like, hey man, like, would you actually want to pursue that? And maybe we won't call them big ass shorts, but we'll like try to make a pair of shorts. And at the end of the day, like, we don't have to even produce these things, but if we just have a bunch of pairs of shorts that you and I can wear forever, you know, that's awesome. Right?
Yeah.
And so we went down this, we probably worked at it for about 6 months, right? Of developing this short, where it kind of settled on this idea of, we wanted this multi-purpose, multifunctional, you could wear it in the gym, you could swim in it, but you could also wear it to golf and dinner, you know, like a casual looking athletic short.
Yeah.
And, we wanted it all made in America. We did the whole thing. I talked to people from Texas with like production companies and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then it just turned out that this wasn't an investment that we were ready to take on. You know, number one, we didn't have the money or the cash to do it.
Yeah.
And two, we weren't super passionate about it. It was just like this kind of fun, silly project. But I was talking to the guy on the phone. His name was Joe. I can't remember his last name, but he was one of the managers for this like shorts, apparel production company, right? Made to order stuff. And he said something along the lines of, hey, Joel, I know, like, I can tell talking to you that like you're a passionate guy, and I think this will work. And it's not about the shorts. It's about a brand. And he was kind of giving me this, you know, marketing talk in a sense. But what stood out to me the most was like, you know, everybody wants to do a made in America shorts or shirt message thing, right? And so you're not going to be successful at this thing if you just are willy-nilly trying to create a pair of shorts or whatever, and you don't have something that you really like stand behind that you really believe in.
Yeah.
And so I kind of hung up and was thinking about it. And I got together with Cayman. I gave him all the pricing information. And I was like, dude, what if we spent some time just trying to build an audience around something that we do believe in? And then maybe one day we could make this pair of shorts, or we could make t-shirts or something. Right.
Yeah.
And so it kind of, his skills and my skills, I've got a communications background. I've always loved photo, video. I had a podcast actually my freshman year of college that lasted like 9 episodes that was horrible because I didn't have any life experience to talk about these motivational things that I was trying to talk about, called the Invent Podcast. But, you know, doing a podcast is something I've always wanted to do. And he's got this photo video background. And I was like, dude, let's do a podcast. What would you think about that? He was like, I would love to. And he was kind of in a place in his life where he was like, I need to also do something else. Like,
yeah,
I don't care what it is. He's got his own business. He's doing well, but he has time to do something else. And so we went back and forth for a couple more weeks, brainstormed ideas. I was really adamant about this name, Good People, for whatever reason. And it's just because of all the things that we're talking about. There are so many things to living and leading a good life, but at the bottom line of it, it's about being a good person. And if you're a good person in all the variables that means, you're going to do pretty well for yourself. I think you're going to have a good experience. Other people that you're in their life are going to have a good experience. And so Good People, the podcast, is really just hopefully going to be this combination of people coming on and us talking about various aspects of life and communication and culture, but it'll be this sort of mosaic of what it means to be a good person in various different ways.
Yeah. Well, it's a great project. I've enjoyed listening to the episodes, and I encourage all the other folks who are listening right now to listen to it. And it really is. They're good people who are sharing like great information, and you will be, not only are the guests are good people, but you, the people listening, will become better people just by listening to it. So it's awesome.
Dude, I've got a lady coming on next week that is she studies bullying and the long-term effects of it.
Oh,
and
wow.
I cannot wait to have that conversation.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that's a big thing right now too. I mean, I think even when I was a kid, there was bullying, but I think it's at a whole nother level now just because of all the
internet,
the platforms in which you can bully somebody. Okay. I'm going to take a complete right turn here. Okay. So, you mentioned way early in this episode that you studied relationships or romantic relationships or something like that?
Yeah, I have a degree in communications. I specified in interpersonal communication, so one-on-one, but I took one or two classes on romantic relationships.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so it's funny that you mentioned that, because something that's been on my mind, you know, like I like to talk on this show about what, you know, what's Ethan thinking about, you know, like what's resonating with me right now. And I started watching this show on Netflix, and I guess it's been around for a long time because the one that just showed up on Netflix is like season 11. I had never heard of this show, and it's called Marriage Without Being Seen, or I have it written down.
Love
right
is
here.
Blind?
No, Marriage at First Sight.
Okay.
Marriage at First Sight. Have you heard of this show?
I think I've heard of it. I don't know what it is. I mean, I guess I would imagine it's like you just walk up to the altar and you marry somebody.
Well, there's a little more behind it, but the whole idea is that these people apply for this show. They go through all this screening. They don't really talk about what the screening is, but I'm assuming they do like these, you know, probably personality tests and all these, like, what would they want in a partner? And there's like, you know, there's all these professionals involved. They actually call the team that make the pairings. They call them the experts. So whatever that means exactly. But the short of it is that you sign up for this program and you get matched with somebody who you are going to marry in 2 weeks. So the whole show like follows people from the, getting accepted to the show. I found a match through the getting ready for the wedding to somebody you're never going to see. And then actually through the wedding and everything, the whole thing. And then what life is like for them after. And I'm actually not that many episodes into it, but it just makes me think like, about romantic relationships and interpersonal relationships, something that you've kind of studied, like what is it better? I mean, like you said, you've got a girlfriend, you know, you're in a relationship. Do you think it's better to like, with all the problems that can come with it with a romantic relationship. And then there's all these countries. In fact, most of the world, a good portion of the world, probably more than does all these arranged marriages. You know, that's a normal thing around the world. Could you ever marry somebody that you hadn't seen or met?
Me personally?
Yes.
Probably not. Probably not.
What would you be worried about?
There's just like, do they clean while they cook? Do they, what kind of music do they listen to? You know, like, do they just throw their socks on the carpet when they come home?
Uh-huh.
Or, you know, like that stuff's very important to, these like little micro actions are very important to the success of a long-term relationship. And granted, you know, you can have conversations around those things. And so I think it would probably just kind of come down to the willingness of the other individual to do the work to, you know, coexist in a healthy way.
Yeah. I mean, the reason why it's really sticking with me is because I think one of the problems with dating, I'm recently single again, and I don't date at all because of this thing. It's like you create this like perfect ideal of this person, and you're like out there scouring the world to find this person, and it's like really hard. And then they don't live up to the expectation, and you thought you'd got, you know, you thought you'd picked the right one, and so on and so forth. And I wonder if it would just take all that pressure off, right? Like if you go, the expectation is completely different. You already know going into that situation, you're gonna have to accept some shit. You know, there's gonna be some things that you're just gonna have to live with. And sorry, my dog's pulling this cord. So I'm wondering if it's just better that way. Like if you become, so this is really the reason why I'm asking you this, because it's like being a good person. To me, being a good person is accepting people for who they are and loving them for who they are and letting that be totally okay. And not just like, you know, we're in this cancel, you know, what are this cancel culture and all this other stuff. I'm just wondering if it's a better way of being. It's a better way of being in relationships. Just like, hey, look, I already know I'm just going to have to accept some shit about you that I don't like, you know?
Yeah, 100%. I see what you're saying. I got a bachelor's degree in this, so I'm by no means an expert, right?
But yeah.
There's statistics on like how many positive to negative interactions you need to have a successful relationship. There's stuff like that, right?
And yeah,
I think that just getting, you know, it seems like on the show, right, they're matching people up based off of various tests or screenings. And again, I don't know how rigorous this is, but I would imagine that they're probably doing this based off of some sort of research that suggests that at a fundamental level, their personality characteristics will match up in such a way that, or hopefully their foundational beliefs will match up in a way that they can have a long-term relationship in that way. And then it just kind of comes down to, like you say, acceptance of the other individual. And, you know, coming from somebody who I've been with my girlfriend for 3 years, and which, you know, is kind of a long time, isn't really a long time, you know, whatever. And likely this is the individual that I'll marry, right? And so I don't have like an insane – I've dated like two or three other girls before her, right?
So, yeah.
And they were all short-ish, and I'm still even young now, right? So I don't have extreme experiences to pull from. I've never had a kid with anybody. She's the only person I've ever lived with. And so from a personal anecdote, I'm probably not necessarily the guy to give this advice. But the way that I see it and the way that I understand it is very much in line with that of acceptance, right? It's like every single person has horrible morning breath and bedhead, and you know, like those are very important things to be okay with about an individual if you're going to be living with them and coexisting with them for decades, right? And so it's kind of a weird thing of I'm at an age in my life where I think most of my friends and people around me are not pursuing long-term relationships. They're partying and sleeping around, which is totally fine, right? And if it's not against their values, there's nothing wrong with that. And so it's just because I think for a lot of people, there's a bit of emotional maturity or anything you do in life, there's costs, there's risks and there's rewards, right? Or there's trade-offs and there's costs, however you want to say it, right? And so what I'm gaining from dealing with like bedhead and coffee breath and all this stuff, it's like, people are losing in Do you know what it's like to sit on top of a mountain and watch a sunset with the person who you care more about than anybody else in the whole world, right?
Yeah.
Unless you have kids.
Yeah.
Do you know what it's like to just be like driving down the highway after you've visited family all week and you're exhausted and you're tired of seeing them, but like this one person who you just shared that sort of experience with and is also just as equally tired, and you don't have to say anything. You're just sort of in that moment with them. You know, like people who don't have that person miss out on those things.
Yeah.
Even though they're gaining in this other aspect. So I think it just kind of comes down to like, do you want to have casual dating relationships or hook up with people? Or do you want this other thing that you won't be able to do the things you're currently doing now? It's not better or worse. It's just different.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's really interesting. I like to talk to people about, cause you know, we definitely hold our romantic relationships to different standards. And even when you were kind of talking just now, I was thinking about like how we as coaches, we kind of get locked into these, like I have athletes at my gym who I think I've been coaching for 11 or 12 years. You know, we're pretty much life partners at this point, you know, and we were like matched. We were kind of, you know, matched up by a few random variables. They came into my life and now we're kind of like stuck together and we have these like really strong relationships. And I think, but I'm okay with those relationships and them basically being these longstanding people in my life. But in a romantic relationship, I might not be okay with them, you know? And
yeah. Well, how many like clients have you had that have like canceled their membership after a month with you?
Thousand, you know,
and you don't
hundreds.
Remember a lot of them.
Yeah.
You might, but you know, there's probably a lot that you don't even know the name. You don't recognize the face. Yeah. And it's like, you forget about all those, but like, I mean, getting matched up with somebody for it's 100% the same thing, right? The people who are your longstanding clients are people that you get along with at deep enough levels fundamentally that your values line up and they care about you and you care about them and you can sort of guide them in a weird way with, it's a friendship, but also a mentorship. And you're also learning from them in certain aspects and ways, right? But it works because these fundamental things match.
Yeah. Right?
And all those people that you forgot about, there's probably a lot more of them than your current clients, correct?
Oh, yeah. Oh, and that's, so, that's kind of what, when you said that, I was like, oh, yeah, that kind of statistically, this is unlikely.
Yeah. Like it's probably not a good shot that the person that you marry in 2 weeks is going to be a good fit, but they might be. And then like, but if that was your experience, then you would have this amazing love story.
Yeah.
Like I have this, you know, me and my girlfriend talk about it all the time when this is going to sound horrible, but when her and I saw each other for the first time, we were sitting in the hallway outside of one of the classes that we were in together. And she says the same thing about me. There wasn't anything particularly specific about her that I was drawn to. I wasn't like, oh my gosh, this girl is like the most gorgeous girl that I've ever seen. And she didn't, you know, it wasn't like that. It was just like this energy that we kind of felt between the two of us. And
yeah.
So I don't, by the way, I don't believe in like there's one soulmate on planet Earth for you. You know, there's like various things that match up and it makes a relationship work. Right. But it was just kind of like this weird thing. Right. And so maybe if you, are you trying to apply to the show? Is that why you're asking me this question?
Well, I was considering it. No, you know, I'm just kidding.
I was going to say, maybe if you get on the show and you have that sort of like weird energy exchange, it's going to turn into something beautiful. But it might just be like you see this person and you're like, and you smell them and they smell horrible. And you're like, I can't be with this person. I'm out.
Yeah. Cool. Well, man, you've been so awesome. I've learned so much from you from listening to your podcast and, from having you on the show and from, you know, getting to know you at the summit that we were at. And yeah, I just appreciate you so much, man. I love what you're doing out there in the world. I love the whole idea of just being around good people. I mean, that concept of your podcast just really, you know, really sticks with me. And so I appreciate you taking the time to be on my show and, yeah, man, just thank you so much. And I appreciate you.
Yeah, Ethan, it's awesome talking to you, man. Again, that like intro of there's just a guy that you mesh with and you connect with on a level, maybe we're meant to be together, but,
I think just, you're one of my life partners, man.
Yeah. 100%. It's been good to connect with you and get to know you and have these conversations and they've been super awesome.
Thank you, man. Well, everybody, I hope you enjoyed this episode. Joel Sherman has his own podcast. Go please check out Good People. It's on all the major podcasting platforms, and he's got a really great feed on his social media. So follow him on Instagram. What was your Instagram again?
That's Coach Joel Sherman.
Yeah, Coach Joel Sherman. So, give him a follow, and I think you're going to enjoy him as much as I do. All right, have a good one.
I'm so grateful that you joined us for this episode of Doing the Work podcast. Providing you with value is why I do this, and I hope you got something out of this episode that you can put into action into your life. If you enjoyed listening to this episode, please share this episode with your friends and family who are looking to level up in life. Sign up for our email list at www.doingworkpodcast.com to receive special offers and discounts from our sponsors. Subscribe to the podcast on Spotify, YouTube, Amazon, and anywhere podcasts are hosted. Thanks again for joining the Doing the Work podcast, and we'll see you on the next episode.